Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and today we're talking with Carol Bergeron, president of Bergeron Associates. She is the author of People Succession, Lessons from Forward-Thinking Executives in Middle Market Companies. Carol, thanks for being on the show today.
Oh, thanks so much for inviting me, Dave. Looking forward to it.
No, it's going to be great. So, you know, I think one of the first things that I always ask authors when they come on, before we even get into the book, why'd you write a book?
Great question. What I found was when I was out there speaking with leaders, whether they're clients or prospects or just business leaders in general, I found that as optimistic as they are about the future of the organizations that they lead, there are always a few hesitancies that seem to hover around workforce challenges, that won't be going away anytime soon. They worried about having the right mix of people and skills. They worried about some of the changing workforce demographics that are happening and how that might impact their recruiting efforts. And then they also worried naturally about their businesses, and they had to be agile and resilient in adjusting to market changes as well. So that those are the things that really were worrisome to them. The other thing that sort of prompted me to write this book had to do with some misperceptions or misconceptions, if you will, about people succession. One being misconception that people succession is strictly for big companies. Not so. People succession is very doable in mid-sized and small companies. Another misconception had to do with it being costly. Not so. There are ways to put together development programs on a shoestring budget if need be. And a misconception about it being time-consuming. And that's not the case either, particularly if you can redirect time to people succession rather than some other management activities when hiring mistakes are made or there's turnover issues or what have you, because it actually helps out with those things. So that really drove me to write the book, is something that would be really useful, really on target with the challenges that business leaders are facing today, and something that's very practical and down-to-earth so they could walk away with knowing how to go about putting such a plan in place.
If you were to say the person that should be reading this book, the person that, you know, you're, if you want to call it targeting in terms of the ideal person to read it, would it be HR, C-suite, rank and file? Who's this for?
Well, I really wrote the book for business owners, executives, and HR or organizational development professionals, because they're the folks who are really in the positions to get things going in people succession. And so I wanted it to be a roadmap, albeit every roadmap or process for companies that do adopt people succession, they're going to need to customize it for their own particular needs and whatnot. But it was really directed to that group so that they could see, hey, there's a really good return on investment here. It's good for the business. It's good for managers. It's good for employees, a win-win, if you will. And it's not as cumbersome or complex as what some folks might think.
When an organization is looking, and right now, as you know today, succession planning is all the buzz, not that it's never not been the buzz, but organizations today are looking at the fact that they're trying to retain great talent. There's talk of this, you know, war on talent. There's talk about all these things happening in the marketplace. And over the last few years since the recession hit, you know, organizations have been having to do more with less. And now, you know, there's a little break, things are feeling a little bit better, you're hearing that hiring's starting to happen again, certainly we're seeing it in the different industries. When an organization starts thinking of looking about people's succession, you know, they start thinking to themselves, gosh, that's a huge, cumbersome process. It's something that we got to do, but it's going to take time. How do you coach them through the process, the understanding of the process, before we even get into it specifically? But how do they get there first?
Well, I think it helps to think about a scale. Visualize it in your mind, if you will, a scale, right? And let's call it the talent acquisition scale. So as organizations are moving forward, they may need to replace people who leave, or they may be in a growth position where they need to add staff to their current workforce, right? So at the end of the day, somehow they need to get that new talent. And if you look at a talent acquisition scale, on one side of the scale is your external talent pool. On the other side of the scale is the internal talent pool, right? And so I think part of it is to get them thinking in terms of you really need both. You need to be looking at both sides of the scale, and if one side is much more heavily weighted than another, that's when you can put things, your growth plans for your business at risk, because at some point you may not have the right mix of people, or those people might not have the right capabilities that you need. So I try to get them to think about talent acquisition more holistically. And to be quite honest, when you do adopt people succession, a lot of the tools or approaches that you would use as a foundation to people succession should be mirrored when you're recruiting from the external talent pool as well. So what's the hiring criteria for a leader, for instance, right? That should be used both when you're developing internal people, or if you're trying to hire people from the external talent pool to fill those jobs. So it really actually becomes very, it's not as cumbersome as one would think, and it's got dual purpose, if you will, right? You use it both in developing and you use it for recruiting people, depending upon which side of that talent acquisition scale you're focusing on.
When an individual has, if you want to call it intellectual knowledge, or someone who has been a key player, key role, and maybe there aren't others who have that knowledge because they've been there a while or they're in a role that is critical, and somebody is looking at people succession for them, how do you go about dealing with the fact that maybe they don't have all the skills for the next level, but they need to keep them and they need to do something with this person? It's been a challenge that you hear sometimes from manufacturing executives or different other sectors, where they have this person that has true intellectual property knowledge, but they may not have the skills to move up in an organization, but they're clamoring to move up. And how do you look at that on your scale?
That's a great question. One of the important parts of people succession is, in some organization, it may prompt them to redefine career development, because I think for years the emphasis of people development was on sort of that vertical promotion, moving upward, right? And I think what people succession does is it provides you a wonderful opportunity to redefine career development and progression as not just vertical movement upward, but also sideways, right? That horizontal. So maybe someone can move from one job to the next, and there's a lot of transferable skills within those jobs, right? So the person could be just as successful in a different role, even though it might not be upward oriented. And I might also even take it a step further in terms of redefining what career development and progression looks like. In terms of, it's a journey that each employee takes over time, where they're developing skills and capabilities and putting them to good use, right, by contributing to deliverables that the organization needs. But it's really a journey of a collection of those experiences and capabilities, regardless of what kind of job or even simply a special project you might work on. Career development doesn't need to even involve a job change. So I think that's at the crux of people succession. It really gives you an opportunity to redefine career development so people don't get too hung up on it's only vertical and upward.
I think that's a great point. And one of the things that is interesting is you do hear a lot of organizations say, I want, and I certainly have heard this, I want 50% you know, internal movement in some direction. And I'd like to still bring more people in from the outside if I can, because I need their new ideas and the new thought processes, the new ways of thinking that might help my organization. Do you believe in that 50-50 split? Do you look at it as an 80-20, 60-40? What's your percentage that you think would be for most organizations? I know we're generalizing a little bit here, but for most organizations to keep talent as well as bring from the outside talent.
Well, you know, I think that the actual percentage may vary from one organization to the next. As a starting point, I might go in and sort of push, well, let's look at 50-50. What would that look like, right? But the other thing that, regardless of what that percent might be, because it may vary, you need to look at, first of all, what are the mission-critical jobs in an organization? So when we talk about people succession, we're not talking about every single job in the organization, right? It's really zooming in on those that are mission-critical to the organization's success. And so the first step would be to zoom in on those, and from there determine, well, gee, what percent do you want from external hires versus internal hires and so forth. Because part of one of the greatest values of people succession is when you invest in people, you invest in their development and so forth, that's a wonderful retention tool. So by focusing people succession on those highly critical roles, it does help foster retention as well as being able to attract people from the outside world.
Technology has certainly played a big role in people's succession today. The ability to stay up to date with current technology, to be able to deal with current technology, to be able to, if you're looking at manufacturing, be able to deal with the machinery that's coming in that now has computer technology adapted to it, and you may not have been trained on it originally. You've done it by hand all your life. Where do you see that on this scale, and how is it factored in?
In terms of bringing people's skills up to date when it comes to technology?
Correct.
Yes. Well, I think that's an important factor. So when an organization moves forward on people's succession, when they're setting their goals for the program, they need to think about, hey, what do we need today, but also what are we going to need tomorrow? And that's where technology comes into play, right? Because the technology or science, if you're dealing with a life science company, right, all that stuff is going to change over time. And so to the extent that you can be forward-looking, that's going to be important. And there's ways to go about that, because when you add technology to jobs, let's say, for instance, in the past have been highly manual, you might be making someone feel uncomfortable or even incompetent in a job that they knew very well. They knew it backwards and sidewards and inside out, and now you're adding this component. So then it comes in the change management part, is how can you get people more receptive to the change. And part of that is dealing with some of the fear and acknowledging it and acknowledging, hey, we're all in this boat together, so let's figure it out. We can do it. We're smart people. We learned the old way. Now we can learn the new way. So it definitely should be factored in to your people succession.
We're talking with Carol Bergeron. She's the president of Bergeron Associates. We're talking about her great new book, People Succession. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
They say it's never too late to be what you might have been. So if you want to turn your passion into your profession, AARP can help you find new opportunities that take advantage of Work Reimagined, a program that leverages the power of LinkedIn. AARP also provides access to tools, resources, and information that can help you at every step, Just a few of the ways AARP helps turn your goals and dreams into real possibilities.
AARP, real possibilities.
Go to aarp.org/possibilities to find tools and guidance.
Real Possibilities is a trademark of AARP.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan.
Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan.
Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan? I like bronze, like my tan. Are sunburns covered? Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group. Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Carol Bergeron of Bergeron Associates, and we're talking about her great new book, People Succession, Lessons from Forward-Thinking Executives in Middle Market Companies. Carol, thanks again for being on the show today.
Oh, thanks, Dave.
All right. So, you know, we're going to talk a little bit and dig into this book a little bit now. You had mentioned to me off air that you've interviewed about 25 executives. What prompted the executives to take on this people succession?
Well, I think that I could boil them down into roughly four areas. So the executives I've spoke with, they took on people succession because they were concerned about unplanned job vacancies. And some of them experienced firsthand situations where maybe a key employee departed, they left for to join another company. In a few instances, it might have been the unexpected disability or death of a key player. So that certainly was one of the reasons for prompting them to take on people succession. Another one were planned job vacancies. Some organizations are facing, with the, you know, the aging of the baby boomers and so forth, several of their executive team members may be retiring in a 3 to 5 year time frame, so they wanted to start preparing for those kinds of transitions. A third reason would be they are having difficulty filling some key roles through the external talent pool because the mix of what they needed was so very specialized that even some headhunters were having difficulty helping them fill those roles. And then finally, it was more about building new capabilities and bench strength because their business strategy was calling for growth. So it could be they just needed to scale the business. Hey, we have 10 leaders now. In 2 years, we're going to need 20 if we can really pull off our business strategy as we mapped it out to be. So I would say those would be the four primary areas prompting them to take on people succession.
No, and certainly all of those are, you know, consistent areas where organizations are looking to make a difference in the long-term growth of an organization. When we're looking to the book itself, yes. Tell me a little bit about, you know, what you have done with this book in terms of breaking it down into what we call the 7 steps of this people succession program.
Well, it might be helpful to first start off with a little bit of a definition of people succession. You know, more traditionally, I think it's been called succession planning and management. And no doubt you need both parts, the planning and the management part, right? So planning includes identifying the mission-critical roles to your organization along with the respective capabilities, skills, knowledge, and so forth needed in those roles. Planning also includes identifying high-performing people who have the potential to take on more demanding roles. So that's the planning part.
Absolutely.
The management part has more to do with day-to-day activities that go on. For instance, making development investment decisions. You know, who are you going to send to that week-long program over at Babson or Harvard, for instance? It also includes the day-to-day preparing people to take on roles, you know, coaching, mentoring, shadowing, and so forth, those day-to-day things. And then finally making talent deployment decisions. So when a job opening does occur, how do you go about actually determining of the people who are being developed who's ready to roll in that position, and the organization can support them and help them make it successful. So that's the first one, those definitions.
Absolutely.
So the roadmap that I've mapped out is it's a 7-step process, and I'll just run through just the top 7 steps at a very high level, if you will, and then we can probe into more deeply each area if you'd like.
That's exactly what I'd like to do.
Okay, terrific. So the first step is really about setting your goals and scope for people succession. So I mentioned earlier that we don't do people succession for every single job in the organization because that might be a bit much to take on. So what I recommend to clients is to identify and focus in on those mission-critical roles that exist in the organization. And here you need to plan and set goals for, what are your current needs, but what are your future needs, too? Because if you stay only in the current needs, then you'll never have that person who's ready for those things that you see on the horizon that your organization will need to deal with. So setting the goals and the scope is an important part. The second step is define the talent needs. So if you set your goals and scope, hey, we need 5 new general managers within a 3-year period because of our goals, now you need to define, what are we expecting from those new general managers that we need? And so defining your talent needs is important because it establishes common expectations among the employees being developed and the managers who are developing them. The third step is inventorying existing talent capabilities. So now that you've defined your talent needs, right, in terms of specific capabilities that you're going to need for certain jobs, in this step, you actually assess the employees against what your needs will be. And out of that comes, think of it as a gap analysis, is here's what we need, here's what we have, and here's the gap that exists between those. And that's awfully helpful because then you can create a roadmap to fill in those gaps. And that leads us to the fourth step, which is making development investment decisions. So given the gaps between the capabilities that you have in your workforce versus what you need, then you can make some investments in different types of development initiatives so that people do become ready for those more demanding roles. Then you prepare the people, right? All sorts of development activities come into play in that 5th step of preparing people. The 6th step is making talent deployment decisions. So when a job opening does occur, what's the process you go about determining who will fill that role and so forth. And then finally, like any program, you'd want to measure progress over time to make sure that people succession is doing what you need it to do. And like any program, you may want to make some improvements and adjustments based on either changes to your business strategy or changes to the program itself so that it can be more effective.
We're talking with Carol Bergeron. She is the president of Bergeron Associates. And we're talking about her book, People Succession, Lessons from Forward-Thinking Executives in Middle Market Companies. You know, that sounds pretty simple, Carol. But I know it's not always as simple as it sounds. How do you get executives, C-suite executives in particular, because we all know it starts at the top, to buy into people's succession in the first place?
That's that question I get asked an awfully lot. And I would suggest start having conversations with executives to help them envision how powerful it would be if they had the right people with the right skills ready when they needed them. And sometimes having those what-if conversations. Let me give you an example. Let's say you're a CEO. Dave, what if we could fill our mission-critical roles quickly and cost-effectively with employees who are prepared to take them on?
Sold.
What if... And what if we could simultaneously reduce turnover among our top talent? So that's sort of a starter conversation. That
Absolutely.
Piques their interest.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's sort of,
it's always bottom line driven, right? It's always bottom line driven.
Right. But that also gets to the emotion part, like, wow, wouldn't that be nice? You know, we wouldn't have some headaches of not having people and so forth. And then you can go into the return on investment. And in fact, in my book, I paint three different scenarios that could play out in a mid-sized technology company if a key person were to leave, and really what it does to the financials. And so that's also, that could be helpful for those executives who want to see the dollars and cents, right? That bottom line focus is, let's talk real dollars and cents in terms of how it create havoc with your business results if you were to lose some key people.
When you're talking with a C-suite executive, maybe the president of the company, mm-hmm. and they say, yes, we need to do this, but it's going to take time, and you know what? Our managers really know our people anyways. This should be pretty quick and easy. Why do I have to go through all these steps? How do you address that issue?
Well, one of the biggest values of people succession is the visibility that executives and managers have of people across the organization. So it is not surprising to me at all that managers, well, they know their people, and they know their strengths and areas of development, and they know this and so forth. But they might not know where the top talent exists in another part of the organization, right? That's the missing piece. And so what people succession, it brings those managers together. So now they have a much better view of all, you know, where the talent resides in the organization, because they're a team, and it behooves them to operate as a team in thinking about the talent that the total company offers. Because there may be times where they're a recipient of top talent from, you know, a person from another part of the company, right? Or they may create a development opportunity by transferring one of their folks elsewhere. So that cross-pollinization does not typically happen without a process like people succession.
You know, I think this is a great way of defining how companies can look at their people. We see this a lot when people are doing performance reviews, right? So one manager grades somebody highly, and when another manager grades one of their people highly, they use completely different criteria. Mm-hmm. And they have completely different thought processes. And so what this people succession really does is bring the whole company together under a continuous, a continuous platform, right? So that when people are looking at individuals, you're using the same criteria across the board, and there's less chance of biases that can be brought into the process.
That's absolutely correct. And the same thing happens when you're talking about, so you're talking about performance, but also potential of people. And that can sometimes even be a challenge to figure out. So if you and I say potential, we might both walk away thinking, oh, I know what that means. But there again, we might have different ways of assessing that. And so by bringing managers together, there's an opportunity to have a conversation, is what really does potential mean here at this company? How do we want to look at that?
We're talking with Carol Bergeron of Bergeron Associates. We're talking about her great new book, People Succession. We're going to be right back on the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan.
Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan.
Not the silver plan. Too much trouble? Do they have a stainless steel plan? I like bronze, like my tan. Are sunburns covered? Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group. Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Our sponsors for today's show, AARP, taking on issues that matter. Northern Insurance Group, meeting your business, commercial, and personal insurance needs. Sheehan Finney Bass & Green, innovative approaches and practical solutions. And the law firm of Jackson Lewis, all we do is work. And today we're talking with Carol Bergeron, president of Bergeron Associates, about her great new book, People Succession, Lessons from Forward-Thinking Executives in Middle Market Companies. And by the way, you should go right to Amazon and make that happen right now, today. All right? Did I do well, Carol? Did I promote that well enough right there?
You did. Thanks
all right.
So much.
You're very, very welcome. No, it's a great book. It really is. You know, in the last segment, we kind of talked a little bit about some of the challenges C-suite people look at as to why they should do it, you know, the buy-in, talked a little about the seven steps. But, you know, at the end of that segment, we talked a little bit about assessments and how you assess the talent that you have. Tell us a little about how you do these talent reviews, some of the tools used, and their effectiveness.
Okay, great. So essentially, there's part of the steps are there's preparation by the manager. So the managers are asked to give some thought to each of the employees that they'll be speaking about at a talent review. Okay, and so we ask them to think about their performance, their potential. You know, where do their career interests lie? Do they desire development? Are they a flight risk, which is a consideration as well. And a lot of times the managers will have a coaching conversation or career conversation, I should say, with each employee to discern some of this information. But at the end of the day, when they go into a talent review session, they're expected to have this information so that it can be shared with the other managers. The other thing that happens prior to a talent review typically is the performance and potential ratings are summarized in what's called a nine-box grid. The nine-box performance potential grid actually originated, I believe, at GE. And so if you can visualize an X and a Y axis where one of the axes is potential, low, medium, high, and the other axis is performance, low, medium, high. And then people, their names may be displayed in the box that represents their assessment on both performance and potential. And that's just a starting point, right? And so as you go through and talk about each of the individuals and their strengths and areas in development and potential areas that they could, or potential jobs, and responsibilities that they could grow into, the talent review is a place where the managers collectively hear about employees across the organization. Again, it's really creating more visibility for the managers of employees across the organization to really understand each person. But the talent review is also a place to calibrate those performance and potential assessments. Right, I think to your point made earlier that sometimes managers may be using different criteria, and so the talent review is a place to actually calibrate to make sure there's some level of continuity in final assessments that are made.
Yeah, I do think that sometimes managers, directors, any level, they protect people they like. They protect people who are they see as valuable. And sometimes when you get them all in a room, you know, their perception of that individual is not necessarily the same perception as everyone else on the team. And there may be good reasons for that, right, in terms of, you know, they may not see the work performance the individual does. But there are other factors, and that's part of what you're talking about, defining those factors, that are still important to the organization, whether it be the ability to get along with others, the ability to be a team player, the ability to be, you know, a high-performance individual and have that potential. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that there, before you go into a talent review, that the managers, typically what I do with my clients, is we have an educational session before the talent review. And that's where we take an opportunity to really clarify roles and responsibilities of the managers before they walk into a talent review meeting. And we, you know, and it talks about things like, well, be prepared with, you know, how you've assessed each employee and be prepared to share that in an efficient way with the other managers, but also be prepared to hear some feedback that other managers in the room may have on those same employees. And we try to get folks to limit that additional feedback if they've had, or base it on firsthand experience, not hearsay, right?
So
we set that expectation that your role, yes, you have responsibility for your department or function or what have you, but when you're in a talent review, you have a corporate responsibility for all these people to make sure that the organization is really leveraging people in a way to help the business succeed. So we try to get them to take off the hat of territorialism or any kind of biases or what have you, and be more open-minded to feedback you might be receiving from other people. And I think if you set that expectation early on, it goes more easily.
No, I agree. I know you also use 360 as a tool. Tell me how you integrate that into the process.
Sure. Now, the 360, and there's different phases of the process that you could integrate it. I typically integrate it once you've started to shape up, well, who are the top talent? Who's the top talent that you'll be investing in? Okay? And a 360 is a wonderful, wonderful tool, but it needs, in order for it to be effective, there really needs to be thought on how it's rolled out. Because if someone's never had a 360 before, or worse, they've had a bad experience with it, right, it can be a little bit scary. So first and foremost, when using a 360, is one, make sure that you're selecting one that really fits your needs, that it's capturing capabilities that are critical to the business, that it's research-based, that it's in feedback areas that are proven to have impact on performance. It's actionable. That is, that you're getting feedback on the 360 in areas that somebody can do something about, and that it's development oriented, right? So selecting the tool that you're going to use is important, but education is the next most important thing, is really educating the employees and educating the raters, which is often overlooked. Let's educate the employees who are being rated, but not so much time typically is spent on educating the raters, and that's a missed opportunity.
No, I think that's a critical part of the process, because that is how you're going to ensure continuity across the organization. And
right.
I think that's what C-suite professionals
right.
would look at and say, hey, you know, if we don't have accurate data consistently across the platforms, we're not going to get the right answers.
Right. And the other thing that it's important is that the 360 be used strictly for development purposes. Because if employees feel like it's going to impact their performance, right, then they may start to get nervous again. So if you say, look, it's going to be used strictly for development purposes, and if budget permitting, right, if you can do it, say, twice, right, do it for an initial, hey, let's get an initial sense of where an employee is, right, and then do it again 12 or 18 months out so you can see what kind of progress has been made, but use it within the context of development only.
Well, you addressed a couple of the things that I think I'd like to try to hit here and there. Some of the common objections that you hear in terms of, you know, people talking about using PS or people succession. Mm-hmm. And one is cost. You know, how much this is going to cost is, you know, how much does it cost to develop the people versus just going out and finding somebody? What's your take on that?
Succession does not need to be costly. In fact, when you think about all the different ways people can develop, right, there's a whole myriad of ways, right? And I think too often people jump to training, right? Bring on on-site workshops or send employees to workshops or what have you. That's just one of a whole myriad. People can read. People can join professional associations. Their own managers can provide them better feedback and provide more routine coaching and mentoring. That's not expensive. The managers are already there, right? You might just have to educate or refresh the manager's skills in those areas. But I'd say the single most important development venue that every people succession process should have is what I call the experiential work assignment. Right, and that, think of it as on-the-job training, some legitimate piece of work that the organization needs to get done, and that gets assigned to people who are being developed. It might not even be a new job. It might be just a special assignment, right? And that does, you know, that's not costing anything. The work still needs to get done. You still need to allocate resources to it. You just happen to be allocating resources to people who are in development mode, and if it's a team orientation, then you have very seasoned people and the people being developed collectively tackling that work assignment. So that's definitely a myth that people succession is very costly. It really can be quite, you can do it on a shoestring budget.
You know, it's interesting. I always think back to a quote, and I wish I could remember who had said it, and I know I've seen it on things like LinkedIn before, and it's that old CFOS CEO, what happens if we invest in developing our people and they leave us, and the CEO answers, what happens if we don't and they stay?
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's a great quote.
Absolutely. I've seen that one as well.
It really gets to the heart of it, right? It really gets to the heart of the point of it's not really money wasted. It's critical money developing your people. One of the other objections that you talked about was, cited as a threat of job security among the managers expected to develop their succession. You know, they feel threatened. I mean, you're talking about somebody replacing me. How do you deal with that?
Well, I think the first and foremost is to acknowledge that fear may exist, right? Followed by pointing out that by not developing successors, that's ultimately going to stifle that manager's career progression, right? Because sometimes when you get to the, let's say you have a job opening, and you reconvene with the managers who participated in a talent review and say, okay, gee, we had two or three people who were being groomed for this, the role was now open, what's the best selection for right now? Well, there might be someone who is maybe one of the top candidates, but they're not selected for that new role simply because they haven't developed their own successor. So they sort of get trapped in their own job and stifle their own progress. And that can be very powerful to getting people to being more comfortable with developing their successors.
We're talking with Carol Bergeron, president of Bergeron Associates. We're talking about her great new book, People Succession. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
They say it's never too late to be what you might have been. So if you want to turn your passion into your profession, AARP can help you find new opportunities that take advantage of Work Reimagined, a program that leverages the power of LinkedIn. AARP also provides access to tools, resources, and information that can help you at every step. Just a few of the ways AARP helps turn your goals and dreams into real possibilities.
AARP, real possibilities.
Go to aarp.org/possibilities to find tools and guidance.
Real Possibilities is a trademark of AARP.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with the one, the only, Carol Bergeron of Bergeron Associates. And we're talking about a great new book, People Succession. Carol, as we end the show today with the last segment here, one of the things I'd like to get to the audience, as I try to do from every book, is a synopsis of what they can take away from this book. What are some of the key 2, 3, 4 things that you'd like to make sure people think about when they go out and buy this book, and would really say that these are the takeaways you will receive from it?
First, I think people succession is a business imperative right now. Relying strictly on recruiting from the external talent pool, I think, will be limiting for organizations, because so it could limit their growth. So people succession is a way to go, and it's really a win-win. Right, because the minute you start investing in people, they take pride in their work, they stay, so it may address some turnover issues, they contribute at a higher level, so that's good for everyone, and it oftentimes raises the bar, even among people who maybe are not being groomed at the moment in time for any particular role or responsibility. So it's really a win-win for everyone. I think the other takeaway is it does not need to be cumbersome. You know, we try to piggyback it to other processes you already have in place, and it does not need to be costly. So I think that those would be the major takeaways. It's important for organizations to take on this if they want to be competitive in the marketplace, because if you're not doing people succession, guess what? Other companies down the street are, and they're going to win the war on talent because of that.
No, I think those are great points that you bring up, because I think today people succession is critical. It's not just something that is a nice to have. It is a must have, and unfortunately, too many organizations are not doing people succession at this point. So, you know, I like to end the show with a little bit of about you. Tell people of how you got into this field. Why'd you write a book? I mean, I know why you wrote a book, but what made you decide to write a book? And, and where they can reach you and so forth.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you, I wrote this book because I just really felt for these business leaders who wanted to move their organizations forward, and workforce issues tended to get in the way. And so think of it as a peer learning in print, because the book is filled with stories from executives in middle market companies. Some of those executives worked in organizations where they had formal people succession processes, and others worked in organizations where no such formal process existed, and yet they still took it upon themselves to be responsible for grooming their successor. So I really wanted to impact a lot more people than I could singularly in running my practice, right? If more people pick up the book and it has an impact on what they do with their workforce, then I think I've made my small contribution, if you will, to the world. And it really plays to my passion. You know, I focus on helping people and organizations succeed. So for me, creating a focus on people succession and putting it in print so more and more people could be doing it, again, is a way for me to have an impact on something I feel very strongly about.
No, that's great. And if somebody wants to get a hold of you, what is your website?
Bergeron, Bergeron Associates.com.
That's awesome. And certainly after this show, directly after this show, we will be uploading your information and a copy of this audio to the HR Power Hour website, and they will be able to directly connect with you right there in one simple link. So, Carol, I appreciate you being on the show very much today. This has been a great information. Again, your book is People Succession. Go to her website or go to Amazon, and let's get this thing up to the top, okay? Let's make that happen. Carol, thanks for being on the show today.
Oh, thanks so much, Dave. I really enjoyed it.
And now the HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group. Licensed agents in 28 states, business, commercial, and personal. Go to northerninsurancegroup.com. Today, we're going to have our tip of the week from Carol Bergeron, president of Bergeron Associates. Carol, what is the tip of the week?
The tip of the week today is, within the context of people succession, one of the first things that you can do as a manager is to delegate responsibilities. It has the advantage of increasing the responsibility of some of your direct reports, having them learn and grow in their jobs, and it also frees you up to work on other activities. Related to that is setting the goal with employees, asking them to learn something new every quarter.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group at northerninsurancegroup.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to do a HR Power Hour replay. Dr. Jackie Freiberg, best-selling author of Nuts, Southwest Airlines' Crazy Recipe for Business and Personal Success, will be coming in to talk about notice, lead, and disrupt, creating a culture of innovation. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.